Hey there. Welcome to one of our first stories of the podcast. I'm David All, and this is Belly of the Beast Life Stories and Beyond. In season three, we shouldered up with you and made it clear that this podcast is not for sale. No advertising or outside influence, a sacred and safe space. Starting with season three, we dedicate a poem to one of our listeners that is standing with us as an enabler of our mission. They're doing so by chipping in $5 at bellystory.com. To be true to our word, we're going back through some of our earlier content in seasons one and two and removing the segments that we feel may not be congruent with this idea. So enjoy. This story, like every other story on our podcast, is now 100% advertising free. A safe space where you can let your guard down, listen, and notice if something comes up in your soul. If you would like to be an enabler, and we certainly could use your help, visit bellystory.com and chip in $5 today. Now, here's that extraordinary life story.
I think is as a coping mechanism to survive, get through my surroundings at times, literally my brain would make me almost go like, not brain dead, but just like totally cut off from whatever's in front of me or going around so that it doesn't affect me.
This podcast is about the time we all get knocked down in life and climb up a new person. Listen for free wherever you get your podcasts. Let me introduce you to Maximilian Acevedo. At 21, Max's story of growing up in a difficult childhood and surviving it is what has made him who he is today. He first pulled himself up and took control of his own life to become a fitness model. Now, he's an actor in Los Angeles. In this interview, Max talks about a lead role he's up for, which he's since won and is now filming. Look for Max in Netflix's Babysitter 2 in 2020. Max Acevedo, welcome to Belly of the Beast Life Stories.
Thank you.
Take us back to the time in your life that really drove you down into the belly.
Well, there's quite a few stories I could start with from as early as maybe 2-3 years old, and then to being at one of the lowest times of my life. I feel that might be when I was, I can't say if it would be from when I was like 9 to 13, when, you know, every night, Pops was kind of addicted to gambling, so would waste all the money away, and then you're not sure if you were going to eat some days and if the bills would get paid, or if it was worse when I was basically, you know, I was evicted with my parents at 17, you know, when there's a few months left of senior year and, you know, you're basically homeless and you don't even really have other family to help or take care of you. And the only one that would for a bit was my mom's aunt, which was, she's not a good person, very cold, mean person. And, you know, after trying to stay with her for a couple of weeks, you know, I realized she was too cruel to stay with. And then what do you know, we're in a little motel with cockroaches and like 4-5 times far away from the high school I was going to than where we were before. And it's funny too, because during a time like that, you would think I'd have whatever friends I had that'd be there for me or talk to me or help me out or see me. But that's when, you know, no one really was even cared about my existence, besides one girl that I'd give credit to that helped me out with a lot of stuff, like from being able to pass my last exams to be able to graduate and show my mom I could do it. When I was walking at graduation, having her in the stands watching me. But yeah, I'm not sure which time would be the lowest, whether it was, again, being basically homeless at that time or some earlier times when I was a younger boy.
So take us back to one of those moments that's really vivid for you. And just describe your feelings around it. Like, how are you feeling in these moments?
Well, my mom at the time, growing up, she would try her best as well as my dad, you know, to the best of their abilities, whatever they thought was good at being good parents. But, you know, probably wasn't really the right fit for them to have kids to begin with. But that's okay, you know. I'm blessed to be here, and they try their best. But, I mean, I remember, you know, the years when my dad, he was in prison. And so my mom would take me to the, you know, those glass windows so you could go and talk to whoever's incarcerated. And I remember when we'd go and see him, it was like, I didn't really understand what was going on yet, but I would look at all these other, you know, crazy guys around and talk to my dad through the glass. And I was like, you know, what's going on? What is this, you know? And then that was something I was starting to like question, like, is this normal? Like, I don't understand if this is normal or not. Or, you know, when I'd get babysat by like random guys who weren't the best of people and would like be hitting me or things like that, or like, you know, lock me in a room, you know, some mentally torturing kind of situations. And so in situations like that, I would then again ask myself at times, and I was so young, but it's crazy, I would think this, I'd be like, why am I alive? Like, why am I going through this? You know, I don't get it. What did I do? And when you're a little kid, you can't explain that also to anyone, because you just don't even know how to, but you're thinking it. You know, you're aware. Kids are very smart and intuitive, smarter than adults think.
Can you remember back to like being abused?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, you know, those guys, some of the guys, and I don't know if they were my mom's friends or who they were, but you know, when they would like be mean to me, things like that, I would just think to myself, what's going on? Like, who are these guys? You know, why do they think they can hit me or, you know, touch me like this, you know? And this was mainly when my dad was in prison. So he wasn't really there to even kind of be there, help me out, whatever. And then my dad was a good guy, as best he could to me. But, you know, there were times as well where he wasn't the best when it came to being just like a more of a role model and telling me I'm doing good, or if I'm showing him what I'm proud of, you know, for him to like say he's proud of me. And, you know, never really, he wasn't able to like comprehend that kind of love and be proud of me for something, you know.
Yeah, I think everyone listening to this episode understands that you were born into the belly of the beast, right? You were born into this situation.
Yeah.
And it was persistent throughout your childhood.
Yeah. You know, my parents, they don't like it when I talk about this kind of stuff because it makes them feel bad and all that. And, you know, I can understand from their point of view, but you know what? It's all good. It is what it is. Things happen in life, and it's how you take it in and then use it as examples for yourself and move on from it and make sure you never repeat those same things you would see around you, because I literally saw the ending of what a lot of mistakes you make in life growing up, of where you end up, where you head towards, and it's not pretty.
So looking back at this, at your whole childhood, just viscerally, can you just say some words, like some single words that come to mind?
Unlucky, sad, happy sometimes, life-changing, dramatic, lonely, cold, confusing, scary. I don't know, sometimes a blur, because my mind would want to block out everything toxic that was going around. So it would just be a big blur. That's why sometimes I have trouble with paying attention, I think, because as a coping mechanism to survive, get through my surroundings at times, literally my brain would make me almost go like, not brain dead, but just like totally cut off from whatever's in front of me or going around, so that it doesn't affect me.
So Max, I'd love for you to talk to us, like, when did you surrender to this as a child? When did you say, I didn't do this, like, this is not my fault?
I would say when I was 14, when I started gaining some confidence in myself, and was convinced by a buddy of mine to join the gym. And I remember I thought it was like all fit back then. I had these little skater boy skinny abs. And, you know, after a month of him talking to me, I was like, all right, I'll join. And then I told my dad, hey, dad, can I join? And, He's like, yeah, but you got to cut all your hair off first if you want me to help pay for it. It was at 24 hours, like $20 a month or something at the time. So I was like, all right, let's cut my hair. So I had really long, shaggy hair. Then I cut it. And I joined the gym. And I remember after my first workout, I was hitting like 15-pound dumbbells. And I was like, whoa, man, my arm's getting bigger already. And that's the pump. I didn't know what a pump was, you know. I was kind of experiencing that for the first time. It was pretty funny. And I remember I'd wear like cargo pants and cargo shorts to the gym with like random cut off sleeve t-shirts. I didn't know like what workout clothes were or whatever for a few months. Yeah, like I started working out and then I started gaining major work ethic in that sense for my health and physical look. And then that's when I just started realizing, you know, okay, now I'm slowly kind of starting to turn into a young man, you know, a young adult. So
what was it? Was it like the discipline or the routine or the control?
It was the control. Yeah. Me being able to like start controlling like things about my life. Like now I'm being an adult. I'm not really a kid. You know, my parents can't really say too much now about this, about that. And then, yeah. And then just seeing results with your physical body after, you know, learning about diets and workouts on your own. Let me remind you, I taught myself everything. I never once had a personal trainer. Everything was self-taught or research or other adults in the gym helping me out, teaching me stuff. And but yeah, I just started gaining this confidence, this independence in myself, as well as I lived a mile away from the gym, maybe a mile and a half. I ran there 5-6 days a week every day and would run back. No one ever drove me once that I can remember. Of course, I couldn't drive at the time and I didn't even have a car even if I wanted to. And
rain or shine?
I would run in the rain, run in the cold, or run on the hottest day.
So was this like an escape?
Yeah, especially like when my parents would be fighting, you know, there'd be no money for food or the bills or whatever. Or even, you know, and I, when my dad would be kind of not the best, mentally abusing me a bit. Whatever, you know, I would leave, and no matter what, it's just I had this, just like The Rock says, like this iron paradise where I would go there, and I'm just out, like the world is like I'm clocked, it's almost like I'm sleeping, like as if I'm sleeping, but I'm working out, and I'm just in my zone, just almost relaxing, like even though I'm listening to the craziest music, and I'm like dripping sweat and I'm just like killing it. I'm this young boy too. Everyone in the gym, these adults would trip out over me because I took it so serious. And back then working out wasn't really that popular. Like since Instagram came out and made it very popular, there was barely any kids my age in the gym. And kids at high school would actually make fun of me for being so serious about it and getting results. Isn't that weird? How can someone make fun of a young kid getting muscle and looking good? Like that's how much people are haters kind of in this world sometimes, you know? But I never made up excuses for anything. They gave me a work ethic like no other. Started gaining major independence from it.
So when you were at the gym, what does it feel like to finally have control over something in your life?
It's a high that no drug can give you. You just have to experience it yourself. If you do any kind of physical exercise, and it can be anything from training, you know, an MMA or boxing to the weights to
but emotionally, you know, what does it feel like?
Oh, it's like liberating, like when you just, especially when you see results and God, and you're just pushing yourself past your limit. It's just, you feel like an eagle, like so free, you can just fly.
Were you getting into fights?
Yeah, I got in a lot of fights, especially in middle school, just because older people, bigger people, they just wanted to mess with me because I was always small. And I also wore crazy stuff. I would wear rainbow Osiris shoes and rainbow crazy colored pants and just whatever. I just wore whatever I wanted. Like, I didn't care. People thought my dad would judge me, tell me not to wear that. People would bully me. My mom would say, no, sweetie, it's fine. Like, let him wear what he wants and whatever. I just had my own style.
How many fights?
Middle school, probably like 15, something
15
like that.
15 fights?
Yeah.
In middle school. How many in high school?
High school, surprisingly, I almost got in quite a few, but then they didn't happen. And then when I was 14, a freshman in high school, I remember there was a guy I knew and he was a wrestler at this other high school. And he was a couple years older than me and like 30 pounds heavier than me. I remember we're at a party and he saw me and he brings me outside and he said I was talking smack about his mom and all that or whatever. And I don't even know what he was talking about. And then he kept pushing me to try and fight me. And I'm like, dude, you're twice my size and way older than me. I'm not going to do this. Like, I literally told him, I'm not going to fight you. Like, I don't know what to do. And he embarrassed me and he humiliated me. And I didn't know what to do. I felt so weak. And I couldn't do anything about it. Literally, it's like a complete bully situation. Now, a couple years down the line, I think I'm 16 or 17. I go to a party. I haven't seen that guy in years. And I remember I go to this party and then there's a beer pong table in front of me and I'm just standing there hanging out. And there's a guy across from me standing on the other side of the table. And when I look up, it's him. It's the same guy. And I haven't seen him since I was 14. And now I'm bigger than him. And I looked at him and he like barely looked up at me once and then like shot his head back down. And he knew it was me. And I'm just like, oh, how the tables have turned. So I thought to myself, am I going to do what this guy did to me and embarrass him? I'm bigger than him now. He's in, you know, I know how this works. He's not going to take me down. I know what I'm doing this time. But I'm like, you know what? It's okay. He knows. He knows what he's done. You know, he won't remember. He won't forget that. But he knows now who I am. I don't think he'll mess with me now. And I just left him alone. I didn't give him the same medicine he gave me. But that was a funny situation, you know, that how that can happen in life where someone's a bully and then all of a sudden years go down the line, you're way bigger than that bully. And then they're not the bully anymore.
Yeah, that had to feel kind of like a metaphor for your life.
Oh, that was just like, wow, I must be moving up. Like that was pretty cool. You know, like it was just, it's interesting because you're kind of scarred when someone bullies you to where they literally scare you. And all of a sudden you see that person again. And now you're more of a man, more of an adult. And like you could take charge if that happened again. It's like, I don't even know how to explain it. It's a crazy feeling.
So let's pick up your story after the eviction.
So I remember I got evicted. I was training for the Jay Cutler Classic to do a fitness competitor competition in the physique category, which is a step below bodybuilding. And then after we were evicted, I didn't have any money to go to the gym anymore. And also I couldn't even really eat much food. So I dropped the gym and especially the 6 weeks, I started hardcore dieting, cutting weight, running my cardio, doing all that. It just went down the drain and my body started just losing everything it had. And I was just starting to look horrible and feel horrible. And again, barely eat, not eat much. And throughout all this time though, even ever since I was a little boy, no matter what kind of tragedies, things I was going through, there was one thing always on my mind that I knew that I should have been doing all along, what I'm meant to do and what I was born to do. And that was to be an entertainer for people and act, because that's all I cared about. All I cared about was making people feel emotions, you know, laugh. I was always a people pleaser. And, you know, and I never really took acting classes growing up, but what I would do is I would train myself and I would just reenact everything I watched on shows or movies or musicals. I always loved musicals like Sweeney Todd and all that. And I would always sing in front of my mom, in front of my dad, in front of other friends. And it was actually in the Reno college days when I was like 19, 20, when my friends started telling me, you know what, Max, you should really take acting serious and go back to LA, man. Like that's what you should be doing. I don't know why you're here trying to be a nurse. You're an actor, man. You should go back and really pursue it. And I'd always push it off and be like, nah, I'm not good enough. I could never do something like that. You know, who am I? I don't know anyone. No one's going to like me. Like I'm not going to have that kind of opportunity. Not in my book, but you know, what do you know? A year goes down the line and it was last year in January and me and my mom were talking about it for a couple months beforehand and she kind of gave me the support and push that I needed to just say, you know what, let's do it. Let's live life to the fullest and pursue some crazy stuff, right? Because it's a very unpromising industry jumping into that. It's not normal. It's a very abnormal thing to get into. And I moved back to where I'm from originally, which is here in Los Angeles. And a year and a half down the road, after, again, heartbreak and triumph and bad people and friends and things, people bringing me down, losing apartments as well due to people being shady and being homeless sometimes in the car. A year and a half, I finally found the right agent, manager, and 4 days later, you know, I got booked on Nickelodeon. And then something on Oxygen Network, and then Nickelodeon again. And then now I'm in the running for a lead role for the new Netflix film, The Babysitter 2. So what a beautiful journey it has been. And so fascinating to think that, like, the whole time throughout that year and a half, I literally predicted what was going to happen to word for word. I would tell people, I'm going to meet someone that's going to see exactly what I and my mom see in myself, and they're going to love me and fall in love with me and do everything they can to push me forward, and I'm going to give them 200% back. And that's what's been going on with my man Pierre. And it's just the universe, God, it works in mysterious and random and wonderful ways. And the great things will finally come to you and happen when you least expect it. And it happens also when you begin to just be grateful for just everything and anything, and just being happy with where you're at. And again, just understanding there's a time and a place. And don't worry, your time will come for whatever you can handle and what's meant for you. And
Max, I'd love for you to tell me the role of your mom in your life, because in some ways she seemed like a villain, and then in other ways the hero and someone who is really supportive of you.
Yeah. Even though there were a lot of mistakes made, you know, things like that, she, no matter what, it's like in her head, for what she could do, she tried her best. And, she always deserves credit for that, as well as, again, she's all I've ever really had, you know, and my dad, but, you know, no one else. And
you don't blame anyone
for anything. I mean, nah, it's like, you know what? I can't, due to the fact that look how I've turned out. So it's like, maybe it was truly all meant to be, because the world needed someone like me to experience what I went through in order for the world to receive what I can give them with the wisdom I possess for my age so far, and the experiences I've learned from, and what I can offer through my art with film and the art of speaking and sharing what I've been through and how I've overcome and pushed through in order to, you know, hopefully and possibly inspire others, whether young or old.
You're 21.
Yeah.
Living in LA.
Yeah.
Getting callbacks for lead roles in films.
Yeah.
If you could go back to that young boy, maybe, you know, 4, 5, 6 years old, you know, what do you tell that kid?
I tell him, don't worry, buddy. You're going to be having a great, bright future ahead of you. And it's interesting, because sometimes I feel the past, present, future are kind of happening at the same time. That's why when you feel you're meant for something, or there's something you got it, you're itching to do or work towards, and then you do it, and then you finally, and then you achieve it, right? Maybe that was actually happening that whole time. You were feeling that. You're feeling your future self, but you can't comprehend that yet, right? I don't know. Sometimes I think about that. So maybe that's why when I was a little boy, just again, ever since 4, 5, 6, when I'd be in the classroom with all these other kids, they'd be laughing at stupid stuff and kind of following each other, being like little sheep. And I was always like this kind of wolf, like in the corner, like, nah, like I don't agree with that. I don't think like these kids, and that's not funny. And I would analyze everything, but also think to myself, why do I feel like I need to prove something to this world? Like there's something just much greater than just the normality of what a lot of these other people, kids were doing around me. And so anyways, I think that might have to do with possibly the past, present, future all happening at the same time, just a random thought. But I would tell my younger self, you have nothing to worry about, because you are going to learn and grow a whole lot. And it may be very hard at times, and life-threatening and heartbreaking, and really test you to your fullest limit, but it is going to create one beautiful person out of you, and you're going to do great things. That's what I would tell him.
When I first met you, I thought that you were much older.
Yeah.
And I think that was just because of like the depth that you carry, yeah. like the emotion that you hold.
Oh, right? Yeah.
You can go deep pretty quick with people.
You have no idea. Well, now you do. You know, and that's why also why I've never really had many friends, because they just, a lot of people, they just, I think it scares them to think and go a lot deeper than whatever meets the eye, and just also just questioning things. And on top of that, you know, I think it overwhelms people when they meet very genuine, happy, good-hearted people that do want the best for them and would be good people to hang out with. But it's like so almost unbelievable that people want to act like, no, that's not true. This can't be true. This isn't a true good person in front of me. So they either shy away from it and they stay away from you, or they do things to hurt you, to push you away. As coping mechanisms for them to keep someone like you away, because they just can't handle such a good person, good energy, a good light around in their life. Because it's just, maybe it's either not meant for them at all, or it's just not their time yet to be able to understand and have someone like you around them to help them out any way you can.
Are you still going through it?
To be honest, from what's been going on, I think I'm the path is so clear. And I finally have things, wonderful things that are falling through and going for me. And I finally have such a beautiful support system. And to be honest, things are happening the way they should. And I still have to put in a lot of work and keep climbing up. But the climb is much prettier now. And the view is getting a lot clearer, and the fog has diminished from sight, and I can see where I'm going. And when you can see finally where you're heading, and you have a plan of attack for every day, every week, every month, and you have a support system on top of that, and things are actually happening for you, and your work is finally getting rewarded with your achievements, and you're slowly becoming successful, you know, I think I may be crawling out very fast from that belly. And very soon, my friend, it will be a beautiful view right there on top. And that's a view I'd love to share with the world. And again, just do nothing but spread love and positivity and bring people up and show them, you know, they can do whatever they feel they're meant to do or want to do. And no matter what they're going through, where they live, I mean, God, with just patience and a good mindset, just being smart with each decision, you know, you can really achieve some pretty cool things with yourself.
So in closing, I'd love for you to sort of think you have a clear picture of your future. I'd love for you just to give a few words that sort of viscerally come to mind.
Maybe an Emmy nominee. An Oscar nominee, MTV Movie Awards nominee, motivational speaker, traveler, adventurer, world changer, founder of foundations to help people of all ages, colors, different regions of the world, people that deserve the most help to have a fighting chance to live the best lives they can for where they're from. You know, I'm saying things like that because I really have a vision as well and a dream to one day, when I have the funds and the status and all that, to just change the world with not only what I have to say, but having the funds to start charities and just, you know, building homes and fixing things in other countries so that, you know, people can drink normal water like me, you know, and just have a fighting chance at just having a normal life. And that's what this world is about in this life is, you know, if you can make change and you have the power to, and you've already helped yourself enough in your life to be able to help others, you are obligated to help others, I believe. And if not, I don't know what you're thinking or what you're doing, because life is too short and there is too many people to impact in this world to not be a part of doing stuff like that for others.
Max, thank you so much for your story.
Thank you.
What an extraordinary life story. If this story moved you, help enable our mission and keep this advertising-free podcast going by chipping in $5 at bellystory.com. I'm responsible and accountable for this podcast, but I don't do it alone. Milos Brochetta is our sound engineer. Artie Wu is our advisor, and many others have helped along the way to bring the story to life. Thank you for listening. I'm David All, and this is Belly of the Beast Life Stories and Beyond. Thank you for rating and reviewing this podcast on Apple Podcasts and sharing it with a friend or two. Stay tuned. I'm working on some stories that you need to hear.